Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We still have both Glenn and Nick. Our last conversation was related to false claims, and lastly on the situation in my own family, and I'm going to address that in a moment. But just so that our listeners know, my business expertise is in sales and marketing. I understand that business quite well. Spent, you know, better part of 20 years of my life in sales and marketing, particularly of consumer products. I have been a manufacturer. I've owned large manufacturing facilities and developed product to be manufactured and actually established manufacturing processes, particularly of consumer products. So I know that aspect of business reasonably well. And I have I established my own retail firm. After working with many retailers, I actually established a retailer. And so I know that aspect of our economy, which is, you know, two-thirds of the American economy is consumer-driven, consumer-related products. And I've spent my lifetime in the midst from all three perspectives in the consumer products arena. Nick, you brought up my wife. No, she did not have cancer. She did have a hysterectomy because of the history of cancer within her family. My wife's expertise is actually in nutrition. She is just a walking encyclopedia when it comes to food groups, balance of proteins and carbohydrates, for example, that one needs for all of the organs in the body to work effectively. She has great expertise when it comes to vitamins and minerals and which of those provide what kind of functions. And you know, she is she's come out of that education process as a individual who just knows that eating a healthy and balanced diet and cooking and, you know, nutritious foods, trying to stay away from highly processed foods, and having a modest vitamin supplement as opposed to trying to poison you, because you can actually do yourself tremendous harm with the intake of too many vitamins and minerals, and your body tries to process them out.
10,000 international units D3 to actually poison yourself. I mean,
yes,
you can, but
that would be to actually poison yourself in terms of irreparable harm. She would tell you, and she'd be right, and I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on vitamins, but your kidneys and your liver do have to work overtime, and there's a residual effect if you take more of many of these vitamins and minerals than your body can use and or store, that have to be discarded, and so you are putting stress when you consume too much of them on your kidneys and liver, and you're doing nothing other than making your urine very expensive and typically bright yellow by taking too much of this kind of stuff. My wife actually suffered one sad event, which was her pancreas stopped performing as it should, essentially died. She's never been a drinker, so it wasn't as a result of alcohol or any other form of abuse. She's very fit and really eats nutritiously. But because her pancreas has failed, and it has so much to do with the enzymes and hormones in the body that are part of the digestive process, she's really had to hone her skills in this regard to be able to continue to live unaffected by the failure of the organ. So that's why, and when it comes to longevity, for example, sales and marketing, I know inside and out. So I can talk to you about why the pyramid scheme is not the right place to buy your products, and because you're grossly overpaying for them. And in terms of advertising claims, I mean, I can spot a fraud of a mile away. I've been in the business a long time. And so I could talk to you about false claims. I can talk to you about inefficient marketing. And while my wife could probably talk to you about nutrition, I can't go too far in that field without embarrassing myself.
Well, back to cancer then.
Yes. Okay.
Why would the General Ford put the marijuana on Schedule 1 drug? Why? I mean, how is your son able to do any research in cancer, with the cancer, without actually being able to access to everything and anything that can and may help with the cancer treatment?
Well, I mean, there is no limitation on what...
He said that he's like in the biological field. Well, biological and chemistry goes all along.
Right.
And if it's not the chemical, new chemical formula or some new drug that he's planning to manufacture to actually be able to put patent on,
let's talk about what happens in cancer research. So you have a better understanding of what happens in cancer research. Almost all cancer research is sponsored by private industry. There's some that are sponsored by government, but most of it's sponsored by private industry. And most cancer research is either in trying to understand how we may be able to work within the genome itself to resolve the problem, or it's tumor inhibitors. My son, as a organic chemist, is focused on tumor inhibitors, and there are a number of companies that are sponsoring his research because his research is in what's called natural product synthesis, whereby we know that there are natural products that have a tendency to be effective in the hypoxic environment of a cancer cell, of a tumor. There's a birch bark that comes from South America and Africa, for example. A birch bark, you might say, oh, what a crazy thing. Well, birch bark is really was the original basis for aspirin. And so if we can naturally synthesize the part of the birch bark that seems to be to create an effective mechanism for taking a trigger into the hypoxic environment, then my son, as a organic chemist, can then partner when his research prevails and that he can replicate it so that we can use it as a mass-produced trigger, then he then would partner with the biochemist to then put on the trigger that will then deploy within that hypoxic environment, and that person would be sponsored maybe by the same company, maybe by a different firm. And collectively, when they find both the mechanism and the triggering device that will work within the cell, then the company that has sponsored their research would have the rights to take that research to clinical trials. And typically, the trials initially would be on rats, on pigs, on something other than humans. And once they had some results there, then the FDA would allow them to sponsor clinical trials on humans. And then if that prevailed and it tested out favorably, to actually sell what it is that they have developed.
In 2008, 2009, there was studied in Wisconsin, in University of Wisconsin Medicine, on human ovarian cells, and that's where the problem lays with testing on animals first, because before the study was done on Chinese hamster ovarian cells,
right.
And studied with the THC, which is a main component of cannabis oil, it did not bring any results or anything. But this time they did it with ovarian cancer cells, human ovarian cancer cells, and because in the United States you are not able to do any research whatsoever with involving cannabis at all, chemists actually engineered at the moment right now a synthetic form of THC. I think it's called Motrin or something. They are actually describing it in all over the United States too.
Okay.
But this is what they were using to do study with a human ovarian cancer cells. And they had success with those. And that study was done in 2008, 2009. Yet, when I talked to oncologists, to my wife's oncologist, there's no, I mean, if it does not involve man-made, chemically engineered, big pharma kind of drug study. There's no.
You're being presumptuous here and a little unfair. First of all, the reason that your wife's doctor is only going to prescribe that which has been approved by the FDA. And anything that's approved by the FDA is something that somebody has spent $1 billion or more sponsoring those trials through the FDA.
And how much trust do you have in the FDA?
Well, it's a billion. It's the average cost to take a new drug through FDA trials is $1 billion. And so the doctor that is treating a loved one will not consider anything other than that which is FDA approved, because if he did, he would lose his license. That's just fact. So he can't do that. He is bound to only prescribe treatments that have been approved. He can't prescribe any treatments that are not approved.
Allopathic medicine doctor, you're talking
about. Yeah. So a regular, no. But a regular oncologist that has a medical degree from a major university and is practicing in the United States. While they can certainly make advice on diet, I mean, when my wife's best friend just came down with a horrible version of cancer, and my wife actually began to prepare all of her foods, because you can have an influence by what you eat in terms of minimizing this. But this person went through all of the big three treatments that we talked about. You know, chemotherapy, surgery, and she happens to be in remission at this point. But your doctor can only prescribe those things which are FDA approved. They don't typically, but they could prescribe a change of diet, but that's not their level of expertise. As for rumors that various, and I know you live in the Wisconsin area, and you may well know some of the people that were involved in a study, but to make an assumption that a university study was not effective in hamsters and then was effective
I don't think they did the study.
Okay. Because you really have to be careful. So many of those claims are grossly exaggerated, then they permeate the internet, and all of a sudden myth becomes fact. We'll be back. Welcome back to Shattering This. We've been talking with Nick and Glenn on the subject of prescribed treatments, particularly for cancer. Nick, you sound like somebody who's had a loved one that's gone through this, and as someone who cares deeply about them, you know, you do some research online, and you see, well, you know, maybe this or that or the other thing that's not been approved by the FDA, you read claims that they're somehow effective, and then you want to convince your doctor of it.
Well, how many times the FDA recalls the product that they approved first? I mean, do you really want to
quite often.
And then cost is so high. Would you really blame those vitamin companies to put down the logo on their thing was not approved by FDA?
Well, no. Vitamins are not approved by the FDA. So there's no association between vitamins and herbs. Herbs are not so the FDA only concerns itself with medicines and medical procedures. That's why if you're a company like Youngevity and you're selling vitamins and minerals, 100% of what you do lies outside of the FDA's jurisdiction, unless you start making medical claims about your product, in which case you'll run afoul of the FDA.
Well, the thing. I mean, I came from Russia. Russia have the free healthcare system for everybody. Yeah, UP.
Yes.
So therefore we have to count on ourselves, so I know much or some about herbs.
That's funny. Let me just
to say that you know this particular herb helps you with this particular situation, and you want for somehow I have to approve my statement with FDA. It's just ridiculous. I know it works. Why do we even need any approval?
Right. You said several things. One is that free health care delivered such lousy health care that you had to rely on yourself. And that's, by the way, what would happen in America if Obamacare continues to be a single-point supplier of health care, and they're the only ones that can determine what kind of health care you can buy and how you buy it. It will eventually be as it was in Russia, where you'll have to rely on yourself because the health care system is of no value. So that's an interesting statement you made. The second statement is that you know that there are certain herbs and probably certain vitamins and minerals that you can take that have a positive influence. I, for example, if like today I woke up with a bit of a sore throat. It's an allergy to something last night, and you know it's that nasal drip that comes down your throat. Made my throat sore. I'm going to go and have a heavily garliced meal for lunch. And the reason is that I have found that garlic is, and many people know, is a natural form of antibiotic. And garlic has a tendency to help in this regard. Zinc is a mineral that has a tendency to preclude viruses from running rampant in your body. So there are things that I too have learned that will work, but they fall outside of the venue of the FDA. The FDA has nothing to do with any of those things. Now, I want to make it really clear, Nick, because we're talking about the FDA. I am not a fan. I am hugely opposed to the model that exists now with $1 billion trials through the FDA for products. I think that model is hugely broken, and the reason it exists is because America is so litigious, and because America, you know, if 1,000 people are helped by something, but 10 people are harmed out of the 1,000 people that are helped, the lawyers will have a field day on behalf of the 10 people that are harmed, and it precludes valuable health care solutions from being available to the 990 that would benefit from it. And so it puts big pharmaceutical companies in a terrible situation where they've invested in many cases 10 years and $1 billion in the development of a drug. They have to market it at a very high price, and they have to prohibit others from knocking it off. Otherwise, they'd be bankrupt, and there's no way they could sponsor the development of a future drug. So the system that we have now is horrible, and I'm not supporting it or endorsing it, but it's important to understand what the system is, how it works, and because there's so many false claims, particularly among the conspiratorial types, about healthcare and your body. So it's always a fascinating discussion. But
I need to go. we'll talk next time.
Love to. We're at the bottom of the hour. Great conversation, Nick. I always enjoy your participation in the show. Boy, we covered a wild swath of territory. We'll be back after the commercials at the bottom of the hour. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We've still got Glenn on the line, although our good friend Nick has gone off. Glenn, as we start this segment, I do want to turn to Paul's letters and a general description and condemnation of them. But even though I admire your willingness to say man needs to know his limits, spend most of your day connected with hospitals and patient care. You explained the area that you are expert in. What was your thoughts on Nick and his questions, particularly his concerns over the FDA and his doctors and cancer care?
You know, what I was thinking is that to approach things, as you said, it costs a lot of money to do the R&D, on, you know, on an individual drug. There's more than one way to attack cancer. You can try to inhibit the cell growth. You can try and cause the cell to self-destruct, all that sort of stuff. It's all exceedingly complex. I mean, you're something, I know, I never even took an organic chem course. You know what I mean? So it's like, I understand that this stuff is all very specific, and like allopathic medicine research takes, you know, a huge amount of time, and it's all based on very specific individual level cellular function and molecular interactions.
It's very, very
specific and very, now, you know, it's,
and by the way, Glenn, the molecular interactions is the big part of it. I mean, that's what my son does all day, is he tries to establish reactions that he thinks will have a favorable result, and we are often surprised by the way that reactions work, and we observe them. We try to learn why they don't work the way we expect them to, and then we try to modify them so that they will deliver the desired result. And sometimes the surprise is better than the intended result, but it's really complicated things, and the level of expertise and equipment needed to do this experimentation is really extraordinary. There's a huge investment in it.
Right, exactly, and so like, and then science is predicated on changing only one variable at a time, and then testing. You know, so the next thing, well, how can you not allow anything and everything? It's like, well, if we're like, you can't test anything and everything. You have to isolate one specific thing you're going to check out. Only that variable and deal with it.
Right.
So that's
your, by the way, it's unbelievably tedious. I mean, here's, you know, my son's got a, you know, an IQ that's unmeasurable. It's over 175, and the tedium of doing the experiment, and then watching the reaction, and then testing for the results over and over and over again. You know, and what he's constantly saying, you know, I could do this, I could do that, this would be a better approach, this would be faster, this would be more efficient, but it's not the way that that scientists are disciplined to operate. So it's, you are correct in your, you have a pretty good feel intuitively for what they're going through.
Well, yeah, exactly. Now, the one thing I was thinking of is, now there are some cancer treatment, you know, clinics and modalities and stuff in other places in the world. You have medical tourism these days and other. There are some of these, like I'm thinking of the one woman who had a softball-sized tumor on her breastbone and, you know, went on a macrobiotic diet and shrunk the tumor, that sort of thing. You have various people who make various claims for various diets. Maybe some of that stuff is worth looking into. But when you get a cancer diagnosis, like you're confronted with the big C and a limited number of options from which to choose. And, you know, like I say, I think most people, you know, are ultimately, you know, unless somebody's doing really promising clinical trials in a research hospital in their area or something like that, they're probably going to, you know, submit to the standard allopathic treatment, and as I say, I have a family member who's surviving into his mid-80s thanks to that.
My experience with it, while it is a horrible experience, whether it's breast cancer, ovarian cancer, or, you know, it's have chemotherapy and then have surgery and then have more chemotherapy, and it's a miserable thing to have to endure. It is the best we've got right now. And I've also have loved ones that have gone through it, and friends that have gone through it, and they didn't all make it. You know, sometimes that system fails. But I can tell you that there is no universal cure to any type of cancer that has been discovered, that is somehow being thwarted in its distribution by large industry or by the U.S. government. That is not the case.
Well,
we have to be really careful on the false claims.
Well, no, it's in the same warehouse as Indiana Jones Ark of the Covenant and 100 mile per gallon car.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, and I understand how people, when you get the news of the big C, and your tendency is, okay, here's the oncologist isn't going to be the friendliest guy in the world. The doctors, that's not their business. Is to they see so much, particularly in oncology, so much death, so much pain, that if they really get to be friendly with their patients, patients, it would eat them up alive. And so they're not going to be friendly. They're going to be matter of fact. They're going to give you what the odds are based upon what you're doing you benefiting from the treatment and the horrific experience that it's going to be. And so it's natural to expect loved ones of that individual, the individual themselves, to be looking out for other possibilities. But I'm going to tell you that while there may be some examples that are actually true of somebody changing their diet or doing one thing or another that's outside of the proven realm succeeding, the vast majority of claims are untrue. They're false hope of people trying to scam money. And a great example of that was all the Laetrile clinics. Joel Wallach was himself involved in them. But the Laetrile clinics in Mexico, all they did was take people's money. They never produced any benefit for anybody. They essentially poisoned people while robbing them. And that's the majority of this. It's con men.
There is a permanent solution for cancer, of course.
Yeah, it's called death.
It's no Yawa.
Yeah, well, if you really want, okay, in the physical realm, there is no cure for cancer. There are ways to treat it, but no way to cure it. There is a life assurance policy. I wouldn't call it an insurance, a life assurance policy. And that's the reason why we devote the last hour of this program to sharing with people that there is hope. You know, it's one thing to expose and condemn conspiracy. It's one thing to expose and condemn government and military and economic malfeasance. And there is no hope. There's no solution in any of those things. But you don't want to leave people without hope, and there is hope. There's, as you know, there's one individual who is always reliable. He's the architect. He conceived DNA. He's the author of life, the inventor of the universe that we live in. And he is offering, as you well know, a life assurance policy. Cancer becomes meaningless.
You know, man, I think, you know, I enjoy my life, but I think whether I die of cancer, I listen to the prepper people talking about trying to, you know, get themselves the right shelter for surviving the zombie apocalypse. It's like, I'm not that attached to life in this world when I've got Yahweh waiting for me in eternity. And, you know, I certainly make reasonable efforts to stay alive and serve God in this life. But whether it's cancer or a marauding truck or a terrorist or whatever, my trust is in Yahweh.
I was having a sip of tea as you were explaining to people that are trying to be prepared for the coming zombie apocalypse. And, you know, I now have tea that I'm wearing all over the place. It's on my computer monitors as we speak. It has been shot across my desk. There are certain things that ought not be said. Certain things should come with a warning that this is what I'm going to say now is hazardous if you have a mouthful of hot liquid. So we're going to have you put in a pause button in the future and say swallow now. Don't get caught in this mode. There is so much truth to what you say. My life, your life, has been so profoundly influenced by the knowledge that that while this life is wonderful, I enjoy it, and as you do, that what we are going to experience soon is so exceeds what we are experiencing now. And we know it because we are experiencing aspects of it now. I mean, our relationship with Yahweh and being part of his family is so beneficial that I have no concern over my own demise. If I have an ache or a pain, I don't go to God and say, boy, I would you like to make this ache and pain go away. I'm thrilled to live and enjoy and to share as you are, Glenn. But I'm just as happy to be gone and to be a perfected spiritual energetic being with Yahweh out exploring the universe. So you're right. The release of that, the fact that you have no worries. Oh, what a profound experience! You know, the last person I saw die was my mother-in-law. What a wonderful lady, sweet person. And her husband had died, and you know, she was still lost in the myth that if she dies, they'll meet up in heaven. And that worked for a while and kind of caused her to have comfort as to believe this was going to happen. And, you know, I took the time to share with her what I know, but, you know, she wasn't receptive to us. There was no purpose in going forward. And at the end, though, well, she had been so brave and she wanted to be taken out of the hospital just to die, because living apart from her husband just wasn't fulfilling for her. When it came right up to the point where she knew she was going to die and death was imminent, she was scared to death of it and would do anything to avoid death and prolong life. And what you and I have, Glenn, and so many members of Yah's Covenant family, is just this ultimate freedom and comfort that to live is gain, but to die is a greater gain still.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, so it's interesting because you have to be careful how you phrase those things, because and you're explaining that some people go, oh, no, look, see, you're depressed, or you've got a problem, but no, I don't want to die.
I'm
alive because God will put me here,
right.
And I'm here to live with him and serve him.
Right.
You know, well,
there's so much we can do. We love our families. We enjoy our friends. We enjoy life, and we have this desire, as you do, to share what we've come to know about Yahweh, His Torah, His covenant, with others, because we'd love others to join us and to be part of His family. So we've got lots to do that's worthwhile and beneficial. In the last segment, Lynn said something that was profound that many people might miss. And that is that he was not saying that that while I enjoy my life, I'm not fixated on the zombie apocalypse and defending myself from it, because I know that my life be truncated, that I would be with Yahweh. What he did not say is because he knows that he is saved. The fixation of religious people is, are you saved? And none of them are. The approach, the focus, the confidence that we have as members of the covenant is to know that to be absent of the physical body, to be released from its constraints, is to be in Yahweh's presence. And to be in Yahweh's presence, he has to make us immortal. He has to perfect us. He has to adopt us into his family. He has to enrich us and empower us. And those things are vastly superior to being saved. I'm not looking at exiting this life because I know I'm saved. I'm looking forward to exiting this life with a whole lot of friends and family, because I know that to be with Yahweh is to be enriched, to be enlightened, to be empowered, to be perfected, to be immortal, to be liberated, to go off and explore the universe. And to that means a lot to me. That sounds exciting. What do you think, Glenn? I think we have Glenn perhaps on mute there, but that was Glenn's message.
I'm here.
Okay.
Yes, I'm in agreement. Yes, I'm driving, so that was
I'm sorry.
A slightly higher degree of noise. No, that's right. No, that's pretty much it. I don't disagree with the notion of salvation, but there's three terms that are actually synonymous, just different metaphors for the concept.
Yes.
Are salvation, justification, and redemption. Redemption is a financial model, justification is a legal model, and salvation is like a physical metaphor. But they're all saying the same thing. We are all alienated from Yahweh by sin, and, coming into covenant with God, he purges us, we come to know him, and he purges us of sin, and, salvation, justification, redemption are all part of that. Process. So
The salvation is a Passover model. Unleavened bread is a ransom model, and of course, Yom Kippurim is a reconciliation model. So God is really thorough. He happens to agree with you that those three words are related, but they speak of different aspects of that which separates us from God. And the salvation model ends up with the eternal life. The redemption model ends up in perfection. The reconciliation model ends up in peace and harmony in the relationship. So they all provide different answers to the same issue. So I would agree with you.
So you can actually correlate the terms to the various feasts or mikra and stuff like that.
Exactly. Exactly. And what we didn't talk about is my favorite one. We've talked about salvation in Passover and the Passover lamb, and redemption of being ransomed through matzah, and reconciliation through Yom Kippurim. But my favorite happens to be Bukurim, firstborn children, being adopted into God's family. When all of those things take place, we are in a position where we can be adopted. And once we're adopted, we can be enriched and empowered, which is the purpose of Shavuah. And that, my friend, leaves us with two of the seven days. We are right now engaged in Teruah, which is to share Yahweh's message, the opportunity, the invitation that he has to enjoy all of these things from him.
Which seems to me, unfortunately, the most neglected aspect, you know, of things. So this is that whole, we humans aren't always that great about sharing. We make sure we take care of ourselves first.
Right, but your contribution to this program, and your interactions with those that you love and sharing what you've come to know about Yahweh, and particularly as it interacts with the human options that keep us away from him, you're doing Teruah. But that's what you're engaged in. And ultimately, you and I are looking forward to Sukkah, which is camping out with God. Yeah, just being with him. It is such a beautiful plan. It's so well articulated. It's so mercifully and generously and lovingly offered. It's so intelligently presented in his Torah. Glenn, I'm sure I speak for you and when I say that our hope is that many more of you who are listening and those that you love choose to embrace the terms and conditions and experience the benefits of the covenant.